Welcome to the Tripod. We break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn. He's the Podonis. And here we are trying to recap mayhem and madness of week one of the NRL finals. Sorry, I had a weird pop-up come up. I think I know. I'm guessing we are live. I'm going to need your guys' help. Comment if you can see us live. Comment if you can hear us. It has been crazy. I just realized my microphone's not even plugged in. So that means you must be hearing me through my headphone mic, which let me know if the sound's okay, because I would hate to try and play with it in the middle of a live video. Sorry, I'm just a bit rattled because that's one of the most crazy games we've ever seen. I mean, we only have four games to unpack, and I feel like we've got more to speak about than any round this season. It feels like you could do a whole podcast, if not a movie, about the game that was just witnessed in Roosters Rabbitohs. Before I get to that, but we will talk about Roosters Rabbitohs first. I think we have to. So shoot your comments through, because we will not remember every incident in that game. So just throw the moments that stood out to you in the comments and we can try and address as much as we can. From a round perspective, one best bet, it won as comfortably as you like, which is good. One mixed matchup, it won as comfortably as you like. Five tries to one, $2.20. Missed opportunities, we'll talk about one game. I didn't back the Podonis and we would have had an extra winner there. And arguably today as well, we both leaned to South Sydney and we're a little bit afraid of the Roosters. And in retrospect, we probably should have had the points there. And then a multi that lost in just absolute cruel fashion on Saturday night with a Cowboys 1-12, but a normal time margin. Last leg of the 13-1, even had an AFL winner in there, and I'll touch on that too. But Podonis, you tell me where you want to begin, but your instant reaction to that mayhem and madness of a Rabbitohs-Roosters clash we just watched.
Okay, let's just begin with the turmoil and the chaos, because this was, as Vossi touched on, Sin Bin Sunday, which was unbelievable. Seven sin bins in the game. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I don't know about you when you watch all your time watching league.
Well, it's an NRL record.
NRL record, yeah. Absolutely crazy, yep. Wasn't it? In the first half. And also to touch on all the teams, all the guys that scored the tries were all the ones with the man advantage. It was the opposite. Normally you see when you get 13 on 12, 13 on 11, one team snowballs and the momentum takes hold and you find space. But for some reason, the defense was on song and then it was the team with the man down that was scoring all the points. I couldn't believe what I was watching in the first half when the Roosters were down a man in the bin with Radley in the bin and they scored two tries on the left-hand edge and go 8-6 up. It just set the tone for what was a frantic and chaotic game. And I think in the first half, it was brutal on the Roosters to lose James Tedesco. I think that really threw them out, how they want to play in their style of game plan. And you see Tedesco makes 200 yards every game and he just schemes around the ruck and he takes one or two hit-ups every set. I think they really missed that. They looked a little bit lost in the middle for periods in that first half. But in saying that, the Roosters in the first half, I thought they were the much better team. They were the dominant team. Didn't really reflect it on the scoreboard. They were down 12 points to 8 and 13 on 11 and South win 6-0 in that period. And Latrell Mitchell stands up and delivers. That was an unbelievable play that he brushed away two defenders on that fifth tackle there, scores a solo try. It was just chaos. And in the second half.
Well, let's just keep it in the first half because there's so many things to unpack there. So a lot of sin bins, right? Like it did seem like one led to another. Like if you isolate each of those sin bin incidents, a lot of them were very soft. Like Radley sin bin for a punch. I saw his fist clench for a moment and maybe kind of push Fend away. It's not really a punch. It's a very soft sin bin. Burgess, I can maybe live with that. Like he did two high shots. Neither of them were that bad, although the first high shot Burgess put on was the one that actually ended James Tedesco's afternoon. So it seemed a bit unfair because the Roosters couldn't even invoke their 18th man because that wasn't the play that got Burgess sin bin. He got sin bin the very next set. And that was a hit that bounced off the ball. There was several others like, well, Totola, second half, a bit of a push in the head. Like, that's never a sin bin. But once you'd set that precedent, then it was almost like any high shot. I mean, Tane Milne sin binned twice in this game. But I think the one point you made there, teams scoring when they were the team at a numerical disadvantage was the crazy aspect of this. Like, when the Roosters scored two tries with Radley in the bin, you thought, oh, they're just on. They're just red hot here. And they've scored twice a man down. And then from that point, Roosters were up 8-6 and the Rabbitohs were then down to 11, as you said. And for the Roosters to not score, they had a golden opportunity. And one of the moments that kept repeating in this game was Suali getting an opening and not passing the ball, and obviously thrown into fullback, and he hadn't prepared for that. And he's as talented as any 18-year-old on the planet. But, and you know, it's funny because there has been talk about, you know, long term he wants to play fullback. And so when Teddy went off, I thought this is actually going to be fascinating to see how Suali goes. And he butchered a couple opportunities to lay on a try. One time that it opened up for him, and he threw it to Tass or Milne at the time. But because he doesn't have that experience in that position or just in general, you know, that was the difference. Because of course the Roosters also lost Tupou to a groin injury and then didn't have Manu in this game. So this game called for some outside backs to make some superstar plays. And it had to be Suali, and in a foreign position, he was solid, but he couldn't deliver for him. That's not necessarily his fault, but I was just waiting for him to have a moment. I was waiting for like the Roosters to put up a midfield bomb and Suali sky and grab it, because once you end up with like Naguama on the wings and stuff, you don't have that aerial threat. And then you talk about an outside back having a superstar moment. It's Latrell. How can you score when you're 11 on 13? Well, because you give it to a powerful human being like Latrell. The first try, I thought it was a beautiful ball that Latrell threw that led Tass outside his man that then laid on to Johnston. But then at that point when, obviously the Rabbitohs' ability to weather the storm and rob the Roosters of all possession during the period of time when they were down to 11, that set the Rabbitohs up well. But the game twists and turns so many more times. I mean, throw at me whatever else crazy moments you can remember from the second half. And guys in the comments, throw other stuff at us as well, because I swear we're going to forget like so many key moments just because that much happened in this game.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, let's just start off with in the first 5 minutes of the second half, Roosters go down to one player on their bench. That was absolutely brutal for them. Daniel Tupou comes off as well because he doesn't make out. I think he came off just before. He stayed on just before halftime. And then
yeah, he didn't come out second half.
Yeah, that's right. He never groin injury. Which is brutal. So you get the Roosters forward pack in the middle there with Lodge, Radley, and Hargraves all having to endure and play the remaining game, which it was already frantic and chaotic enough as it was when you can't refresh and recover those guys and give them a spell. Then I've always thought that the Roosters were going to be in danger. Obviously, I've been able to steamroll them late, and I think we saw exactly that. But even after, I think there was a sin bin incident around the 60th minute when South hit the lead, went 22 points to 8 up. You nearly think the game's over. And then Totola has a brain explosion, pushes the head of one of the Roosters players on the ground. Radley comes in, starts a melee, and then they both go to the bin. Roosters have another chance again. They score a try, and all of a sudden the game's in the balance again, 24 points to 14. And then there's another sin bin to South. And
Milne again.
Milne again on halfway. He hits one of the Roosters wingers high. I think it was Naguama. And then all of a sudden, there's about 15 minutes to go. And you think the Roosters score, they have a chance. And then the game's there for them. And I think back to one of the ones that they bombed. I think Keary throws that long pass on last tackle. Goes to Naguama. The pass was a little bit short because Naguama had to step on his left foot and cut back on the inside. If the pass went to the sideline and he can grab it out of the air and he scores in the corner untouched, it's a game of inches and millimeters. And that pass,
Walker threw a cutout to Naguama, and Connor Watson just touched it on the way through and sent it forward. Yeah. Had he not touched it, that's also a try. I'm with you. Like, it's game over, and the Rabbitohs are going to win the game by 20 or 30 points once they got up 24-8. Like, that broke the Roosters' backs, and the Rabbitohs didn't have as many players injured or out with HIA. And in fact, the one HIA the Rabbitohs got with Burgess, they were allowed to bring their 18th man, Cheekham, in because it was an act of foul play. So it was game over, and Roosters were going to get thumped. And what came to mind for me, and guys, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to be able to shout out all of our celebrities and guys from our group that contributed tips on the Thursday extravaganza pod. I know a lot of the guys had some really successful tips. And if you can comment in the thread, like Benny Williamson, Matty O'Keefe, Benny Howard, a lot of these guys gave some great tips. And I wish I could shout them all out. There's just so much going on. But for one, like Latrell Mitchell to be top point scorer in the finals, you know, he had a try in this game. He kicked every goal. And I'm thinking to myself, the Roosters could put a score on here. So that at that moment, as you said, with about 25 minutes to go, and it's 24-8, it's just not the Roosters' day. They've lost too much. But somehow from there, you're right. Like the funny thing is people will blame Radley for running in and getting himself sin-binned. But if Radley didn't run in after the Totola push, it wouldn't have even been picked up and Totola wouldn't have been sin-binned. And that sin-bin actually allowed a penalty to the Roosters. So it actually was advantageous to the Roosters. Then they get a try. It was Butcher off a Kiri kick. Then it's 24-14, 10-point game, you know. Definitely feel like if the Roosters can get the next try. And as you said, when Milne was sin-binned, now it was 12-11. So having a man advantage is clearly an advantage, but it's even more pronounced when it's 12-11, the chance to score and so much fatigue in the game. And as you say, I really feel if the Roosters could have scored any of those opportunities, they could have won. They would have had the Rabbitohs absolutely on the rack, but in the end, the Rabbitohs just hung tough, turned it around. Do you have any other moments? I'm sure there's still more, and I'm going to go through some of the comments, but put a bow on that game for us. Obviously, carnage, but the Rabbitohs play an opponent that spent a lot of petrol last night too.
That's right. And look, and we saw it with the Roosters. The Roosters go and win 8 straight, fall short of the top 4, and they beat South last week, and you see it all too often. Very hard to beat the same opponent 2 weeks running. I think we said it on Wednesday that South were going to be in this game up to their eyeballs. And I think without Manu, I think it really showed in the final 20 minutes when they needed points. They didn't have their two stars in Tedesco and Manu on the field. And the Roosters were given a chance as well at the end where there was a knock on from Latrell Mitchell that was called. And Mitchell sent it upstairs because he challenged it. He didn't think it was right. And to me, it looked like a blatant elbow from Sam Verrills. It should have been a penalty. I think the crowd was blowing up at the same time, but the Roosters got a chance. South defence held on again. I think that was the story of this game, was the defence of both teams when they were down a man. And I think South have really shown that they can compete with these big sides. And in the big moments there, best players stood up. Walker had a great game in both attack and defence. Latrell Mitchell, there's not much more to say about him. And Cam Murray as well. He really showed how much he was missed last week with a stellar performance through the middle. And Damien Cook as well. He missed the last 2 weeks and he was seemed to be the forgotten man as well. But his scheming around the ruck and his defense is pretty great at times. So South are in this comp up their eyeballs. And it's going to be interesting next week with both them and the Sharks having weathered some brutal physical encounters and which side's going to hold up the best, Jacob.
But ultimately, you're right. The headline is glory, glory to South Sydney. And a guy you didn't mention as well, Cody Walker, I think had 3 or 4 try assists in this game too. We don't want to be too Roosters-centric in our recap of it. Yeah, Cam Murray was absolutely immense in the middle of the field, probably did get the better of his counterpart at lock there. And Rabbitohs just holding stout enough when they needed to in the key moments, as you say, especially when they were reduced. The reason we didn't back the Rabbitohs as a best bet +4.5, our respect and our fear of the Sydney Roosters. And then that's kind of also what kept me off a best bet on Friday night. So now we're going to rewind and go through the other 3 games and keep sharing your thoughts with us, please, guys. So Friday night, probably the least eventful game, which is saying something because this was a hell of a finals clash for the first 50 minutes at least. Panthers 27. Beat the Eels 8. And what I was just going to say about this game is I felt like you could only play Penrith. It was a light line at home and they're a superstar team. And then you had sent me your notes and you liked Penrith. You wanted to best bet them and you would suggest betting Eels under their team total 16. And I just thought, I just don't want to go against an Eels side in form in such an important game. And I kind of felt right in my thinking and vindicated in the first 50 minutes because Parramatta were absolutely up for it and threw everything at the Panthers. But I think you were proven to be correct because ultimately Penrith overwhelmed the Eels.
Yeah, that's right. I think the Eels couldn't have played any better in that first half and the first 10 minutes after halftime. but it just really shows the dominance of the Panthers. And I think that having the week off last week really helped them as well, because it really showed their freshness and enthusiasm late on. They were the stronger team through the middle of the field, and they were able to get the ball to their edges. And I think Cleary, I said it on Wednesday, that be wary of him, because I think he had his best club game that I've seen him play in a long time. His kicking game was superb. It was almost very eerily similar to last year's game one up at Townsville when they played South, and he hit a few of those spiral balls for Blake Taff, and it really sent him wayward. But Wonga Blake was having nightmares all night on Wednesday. On Friday. And I think it really shows that Penrith have gears that some of these other sides can't match. And I think the Eels now have to go the hard way around and beat Canberra, and then they're going to have to face the Cowboys up in Townsville to make a grand final. So it was a big game for both sides. I think the Eels were up for it, but the class of the Panthers showed. And even though we didn't take them as the best bet, at least we were able to win on the mixed matchup in some capacity. And hopefully some of you guys out there that were listening on Wednesday, if you did lean Penrith as well, and I said that I think the spread should be a 10 around there. So hopefully some of you guys got some action and made some money on Penrith, but yeah, it was a missed one for us.
You know what I just realized? We're not live on our Facebook pages for some reason. So we're only live on YouTube. You usually share the Facebook video in, don't you? So you wouldn't be able to see it, but I'm just going to share it on Facebook. That's what the weird message was that popped up for me. So sorry, that's just technology at its best. Of course, the most exciting recap show. We get an issue, but appreciate you people that are tuning in to us on YouTube. Look, this game took an almighty turn because I really felt that Parramatta could absolutely win this. And you say they couldn't have played better? Pretty much. This was another, like a repeat of the duel they had in Mackay last year, which was 8-6 to Penrith at halftime and no points in the second half. And in this occasion, it was 7-6 to the Panthers. Moses out of the blue going for a field goal, which I guess is kind of smart when the other team's not expecting it. And then if you do kick the field goal, you're going to receive the kickoffs, you're going to retain possession. But then he missed. He gave the Panthers a 7-tackle set, and Cleary said, what you can do, anything you can do, I can do better, and actually did kick the field goal. Might have helped people that had like a Panthers halftime, full-time type bet. But when you say Parramatta couldn't have played better, well, the one thing they could have done better was catch Cleary's bombs. And it's no fluke. I mean, you know, one of the things he would have done, and he's a meticulous player in his preparation, you know, he would have done everything to be on his game when he was returning from his suspension. And no doubt he was perfecting those tormenting bombs. And boy, did he torment the Eels back three. And Penrith's only try in the first 50 minutes and in the first half was off that spilled ball that was spilled by Wonga Blake. And Panthers, you know, a couple of flick passes and they score. And at that moment when Penrith got that try, I just thought, oh, it's just not going to be the Eels' night. Like, you can't go into Penrith and beat this super team and they score a try for a dropped bomb. It has to be the other way around. You're the team that needs to get a lucky try. But in Parramatta's credit, like, there's still a try piece at halftime. You come out, you actually get your nose in front, you get the penalty goal, you're up 8-7. And then it all changes basically from the moment of the To'o try, which was a direct result of another Parramatta error. I can't remember if that one was also a spilled bomb, because the Eels did spill about three bombs in this game. But I also recall Mike Acebo just losing it in the play the ball and handing Penrith, I'm getting my words mixed up with all these P's, but handing Penrith possession in the red zone too cheaply. And ultimately, once Penrith went bang, bang, and then Mitchell Moses, and there's a comment there, what do we think? I mean, it looked bad, but it's hard to speculate because I've seen other concussions look bad. And as long as the player has 7 days to recover, you know, the Victor Radley one looks terrible. Or, you know, Cam Murray was back last week. So they sometimes say it's not always how bad it looks at the moment. It's all to do with the symptoms and stuff. So will Moses play? I'd say it's still all likelihood that he will play, but it would be a concern. And if you do take Canberra early, we're not going to really talk too much about the next matchups because that's what Wednesday's for. But if you do take a team early and there's a player in doubt, you do have that possibility that there's a scratching in your favour. And so once Moses was out and once Penrith had gone bang, bang, then it was game over. Parramatta couldn't generate any offense, certainly with Jacob Arthur coming on to halfback as well. And they just weren't able to drag themselves back into the game. And you're right, like, although we didn't best bet it, we did build it into the mixed matchup, which was going against Parramatta tries. As I said, they only got one. And it was the first leg of my multi, the unders, which was actually under a lot of threat late in the game as it looked like Penrith was going to blow them out. But it stayed under the number as well. We'll get to how that multi ended, though. And look, this I feel is the underrated game of the weekend. Canberra Raiders 28 beating the Storm 20, because in any other week or any other final series, this should be the lead and this should be the headline, because this was a crazy game, but it wasn't even the craziest game on Saturday. But we will still talk about it because it was wild, Podonis. And an upset as Tristan. Oh, have we watched Tristan's clip yet?
No, we haven't.
I watched it when he flicked it to me just before we went live. Let's play that now, because Tristan gave the bookie reaction to this wild weekend as well.
Hey, Tripod family, Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. And what a game we've just witnessed there. There was so many sin bins. Obviously, the Rabbitohs just getting over the line in the end of what was a high-quality affair. And the game last night between the Cowboys and the Sharks was something similar. Just the betting moves on the weekend. The Panthers, they were backed head-to-head with a lot of multis, but the Eels were backed plus a start in that game. So we chopped out on the first game, but then, as I said, the multis rolled through into the Storms. That was a good result from our end when the Canberra Raiders got the big upset. From there, though, it was an interesting one where pre-game we definitely wanted the Cowboys, and then we took quite a sizable bet on the Cowboys at $10 when they were in play, when they looked in a bit of trouble late. So that really hindered things in that game. And then in this match, there was one-way traffic for the Bunnies, both at the plus and the head-to-head. So also when there was some sin bins and HIAs, the punters came for the minus at the halftime for the Bunnies. So this one was an ugly result, but the Raiders one helped out. So all in all, just in front of the weekend, it's been a fascinating start to finals, and looking forward to the next few weeks coming up. Hope you're back to winner.
So the Raiders upset a friendly result for most bookies. You kind of feel, I mean, good luck or well done to anyone who picked this upset, but you kind of feel the same types of punters that are taking Panthers head-to-head are probably likely to roll that into Storm head-to-head, and that would have knocked them out at that point. In fact, after the Panthers, who were the favourites obviously on Friday night, prevailed, was three underdogs who got up. And look, we probably leaned Storm, but we ultimately didn't have a strong opinion on this game. For me, it all hinged on like what Jerome Hughes' health was going to be. And I will say my super early observation in this game was Hughes looked fine, and he looked fierce, and he looked fast. And so I thought the Raiders were in a bit of trouble, and the Storm had the slightly better territory and better of it from the beginning. But the Raiders opened the scoring with a long-range try that really announced that they were up for this game. And that was just one of many wild moments throughout the matchup.
Yeah, you talk about having the better of it early. I think they had 9 straight minutes to start the game where the Storm were camped on the Raiders' try line. And that's just wild to me. That's just absolutely crazy how they didn't score. Phenomenal defense from Canberra, really showing that they were up for the contest. And again, it shows the point. You touched on it on Wednesday, Jacob, and maybe we didn't put enough faith into it, but are Canberra fearful of going down to Melbourne? No, they're not. They just had 3-4 wins in a row. And I think Ricky,
I believe Stewart, that's number 5.
Number five
in Melbourne. Yes.
And absolutely phenomenal first try, the breakaway where Timoko palms away Munster. That was the best try of the round to me. And we saw some crazy fantastic tries, but that to me was the best one. Tarpanay through the middle, creating a line break. And Canberra steaming away on the right-hand edge. And I think the Storm steadied themselves after that and got back into the contest. I think Harry Grant couldn't have played any better. And it just goes to show that they fell short again. But I think in the second half, it was more of the same. It was attack and attack, because that's just something that I picked up all final series as well. What happened to tight, low-scoring games? Because some of these finals games, the defense looked non-existent. I think so. There were some soft tries that the Storm conceded, and Bellamy even said it as well in his press conference. And I think back to the final try, that was a nail in the coffin, which was, look, it's pretty unlucky. You can't really defend it. They had an overlap, and it was a wayward pass that hits, I think it was Whitehead's head, and then it bounces in the in goal for a partner to jump on. They couldn't have done much more, the Storm, but I think, it was one of those games where I think we've said in the past few weeks heading into this game that the Storm have looked vulnerable at times, and They had some big wins in there, but were they a bit phony? They played the Panthers and beat them with all those players missing down in Penrith, and they put 56 points on Brisbane. But how good does that look in retrospect? And they came up against the Eels, and they lost in that encounter without Hughes. We thought Hughes was going to be a big component stepping back in. I think he was. I think in hindsight, playing Munster at fullback, I think really it let him down in terms of being able to control the middle of the field in attack, because I think it takes away what Munster can do. Maybe he's not used to fullback in terms of the defensive load and the fatigue that it puts on you, because I think he doesn't have the same spark in terms of making line breaks and being able to create play. But Canberra, congratulations to them. And Ricky Stewart was going to break the glass in the box there at the end when they tackled the Storm out. It was a great win for them, and now they play the Eels and they're going to give themselves every shot of going through.
You know, the other factor of Munster at fullback was it brought Meaney into six, not a position he's familiar with, and in defence he had some bad frontline misses. You talk about uncharacteristic tries that Melbourne let in, and you made another point there about that opening try. Like, I watch every minute of every NRL game, and there were so many moments this weekend that made my jaw drop. Boy, I just went, wow, like I was stunned. And that was a stunning try. But then the Raiders' next try wasn't their next try, Jamal Fogarty. I was equally stunned, just because when does a halfback get it at first receiver and just muscle over against the Storm? And Meaney might have been one of the defenders that had a poor miss there. And then Whitehead was in the first half, and again, tackles falling off. Meaney might have been not to single him out, but that's an unfamiliar position for him, and that's all part of the mix. You talk about the final nail in the coffin, that try. I think if it was off Whitehead's head, being an Englishman, people might claim it was a header. I have actually thought of that in the past. Like, would you ever deliberately set a player up to head it through because the defense wouldn't be ready, and it's kind of the same as kicking it through? I think in reality, it would be so hard to execute. But that was the nail in the coffin. But funny, I was watching the start of this game going, geez, Canberra have got that attitude about them. Like, they're absolutely going to dish it up to Melbourne tonight. And they do have, I'm trying to think of the right word, but that kind of same energy from 2019 and that aggressiveness. And the guy that was just about their best player in 2019 won Dally M second row of the year, Johnny Bateman. And they really missed him when he left. But I see similarities in Hudson Young. And I thought it was funny that Hudson Young scored the go-ahead try in this game, similarly as Bateman did 3 years ago when the Raiders beat the Storm in the first week of the finals. And it was back and forth in this one, wasn't it? Because the Raiders did build a couple of try lead, but then Melbourne hit the front again with 15 to go, and it was Canberra who needed that try from Hudson Young, chasing a kick through. Munster gets a terrible bounce, but also Munster was playing with fire, risking it, trying to see if it would go dead, and got burned on that occasion. And, yeah, I think ultimately, as Bellamy said, you let in that many points, you just don't deserve to win, and that is uncharacteristic. And, I'll share another insight. I was listening to an interview with Brett the Naster yesterday before the game, who is obviously Cam Munster's agent, and now Munster has the ability to negotiate from November. And they're saying, obviously, he's not thinking about his next deal because he's fully focused on his footy for the finals, and that's what Melbourne wants too. And Naster made a couple of comments like, once Melbourne's out, we'll look at announcing where he's going. And I just thought it was funny the way he said, once they're out, as opposed to, once the competition ends. Yeah. And he was pressed on who he thinks will win, and he actually said, I don't think Melbourne have it. I just thought, like, when you represent Munster, and you're saying this guy's worth like $1.5 million a season, and you're writing off his team, you don't think they can win it. Like, I thought that was kind of telling, because I was saying to people that, look, if Hughes is fully fit, Melbourne's still pretty damn good. You think about that night they went into Penrith and their defense was just absolutely impeccable. So they were off their game, and that's the finals. And that's what happens when you get in the sudden death. When you're in that 5-8, you have one bad day, it's all over. And Canberra, if they can play that brand of footy, they can last more than 1 week as well, but we will talk about that on Wednesday. Final game to dissect, and this was absolutely wild and wacky as well. And you talk about a points fest and not seeing it coming for finals games, and two teams that have been really good defensively in 2022, but it was an attacking showcase in Cronulla that went about 93 minutes in the end, and in Golden Point, a Valentine Holmes 2-point field goal, was the deciding moment, and Cowboys won 32-30. Where do you want to begin with this one, Padonis? We had a best bet, I should say, as well. Yeah. Now, I just really liked the Cowboys, and I would have gone plus 2.5. We looked if we could get plus 4.5. We couldn't. You liked kind of either team 1-10. Either way, we would have won, but I think your bet was even better because the way we played it, we ended up going either team 1-10, and in fact, we could have gone Cowboys 1-12. You almost never felt in danger because it was so tight. And it's funny because we've had that bet twice in the last 5 or 6 weeks, and they've both been Cronulla home games, and they've both ended up going to Golden Point. So whereas the way I would have played it, playing the Cowboys with the start, you were in absolute danger until the 80th minute when the Cowboys got a try that forced Golden Point. But, yeah, crazy final 8 minutes, but lots of wild moments before then too.
Yeah, that's right. I think no one got more than two tries ahead in this game. It was back and forth. And the one stat to
me... more than one try ahead. It was, the lead was never more than six. Oh, sorry. Well, the biggest lead was 8 points. Yes.
Yeah, that was only by virtue of a misconversion from the Cowboys, from Holmes. But in the first half, it was attack, attack, attack. As you said, the one stat that stood out to me for the entire game was there was 4,500 running meters shared between
these. Oh, my goodness.
Which is just crazy because normally you see, 1,200, 1,300 from each team. But this was such was the magnitude of some of these tries. They were long range and plenty of line breaks and tackle busts. And you mentioned the halves in the game before when we spoke about Storm Raiders with Jamal Fogarty. What about Tommy Dearden running from dummy half? And it looked like Usain Bolt going through the halfway line there.
60-meter dummy half try. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah. And even the try after that, the Sharks scored as well. Nico Hines had some great touches and puts the Sharks away. And at halftime, at 18-all at halftime, you think that the game's in the balance. And I thought it was going to slow up in terms of the scoring. It was going to be more of a grind and a defensive back and forth game in the second half because you didn't really felt like one team was going to give an inch because such was that game where if you felt one team got two tries ahead, then it felt like they're going to run away with it. But I think both sides' defenses allowed the other team to come back into the game. And I think back in the second half as well, the Sharks go 8 points up and they're nearly there. And the prelim, and they can smell a prelim. And on the back of what was a great crowd there, full house at Shark Park at PointsBet Stadium, they were every bit as good as the second place team. But the Cowboys, they've shown time and time again this year that they can withstand plenty of adversity. They've been pretty unlucky in their last few trips in Sydney. We were on them last time against South and they fell short. And we said on Wednesday that we definitely think that they can make a great account of themselves and they can really get there with the Sharks. And it was going to be a back and forth encounter. And we thought that the Cowboys were a slightly better team, which is why we did like to take that bet. If we did take the plus 2.5, then as you said, we're relying on a try with the final in the dying seconds. But how many times have you said on the podcast, Jacob, as well, that when you're down by 8 points, it's smart to take two to go behind by six rather than trying to rely on two tries. And that's exactly what the Cowboys did, taking the two. And they had a man advantage as well. I think it was a clear professional foul. Val Holmes was going to score for all money. So I'm not sure what really try to constitute a penalty try because is the bunker there to say that he was going to drop the ball over the line? I'm not sure. I think all he had to do was just catch it and it was a try. But instead, the Sharks have a man sent off for the remainder of the 7 minutes and the first 3 minutes into extra time. And how good's the concept of extra time? Because we've seen it. It's pretty unlucky if you can go out without trying to touch the ball. And Val Holmes was the one who came up clutch in that. I think the Sharks won the toss in the first period and they chose the wind and the Cowboys had it in the second stanza and that was where it told because I think that was the one where if you're 40 metres out, you can attempt a field goal, whereas with Hines, there was a few times where it was last tackle, they got tackled on the 40-metre line and he couldn't really attempt it because they were just into the wind and it wouldn't have had the legs. So Val Holmes with a clutch play and showing that he knows every blade of grass on in that stadium.
It is funny how he's the one that comes back to haunt them. And, of course, Townsend, integral part of this Cowboys side as well. But the pivotal moment, the one you touched on, 8 minutes to go. The Sharkies have probably done enough, and if they can hold the ball, can probably hang on and win this game. And the grubber in the in goal and the contest, and Val is going to get there first. Look, to me, it's a harsh one. I think they get it right, the professional foul, because Tracy comes behind him. But I thought it was pretty bang-bang. Like, I thought that in a different game, a different video ref or a different ref could have argued that Tracy, although he came behind him, kind of went shoulder to shoulder, like kind of reached in shoulder to shoulder to jostle. But ultimately, I guess he bumped Val Holmes just before he played at it. I don't think you can give penalty try because it's a grubber that's coming in pretty fast. And so if he didn't get bumped, I don't think you can guarantee like he would have grabbed it. So I think you get the call right. And we have discussed this notion. When you're down eight, you get a penalty. What do? And I think we've said you take the two and you don't muck around and waste any time. And because it had been to the bunker, the clock was stopped. And the moment that they waved time back on, Val Holmes already had his kick set up, drilled the kick, 7 minutes left, and they knew they were down six with a man advantage. Waited till the final minute of the game. Taumalolo's first try of the season, which is crazy because the Cowboys have had such a good season. You'd think Taumalolo probably scored a few tries this year because usually he's the guy that carries the team on his back. But no, that was his first, and that was such an important try. And the other thing going through my mind as we get to Golden Point is it's such a huge difference for the team that loses versus the team that wins this. Like the team that wins, we keep saying how paramount it is to get 2 weeks off and get to host the prelim. And the team that loses is going to have played 90 minutes plus and has to do it all again next week against someone really good, because the loser knew they were getting the winner of South's Roosters next week. So it was a brutal loss for the Sharkies. In reality, like, they're not going to win the comp this year. Had they won this game, then they'd have a real chance to make a grand final, and you can't rule anybody out. Anyone that can make a grand final can win a comp. Now it just seems so unrealistic that the Sharkies could pick themselves up from that and win three in a row. Now the Cowboys could, like, definitely, plausibly win the competition, and certainly we'll start favourites in the prelim, whoever it is against. I think even if it's Parramatta, obviously if they play Canberra, we know they'll be favourites, but I think even Parramatta going up there would be an underdog. So Cowboys box seat to make a grand final. Another moment, and keep shooting them through to us, guys, but like you said, like one of the tries of the season or try of the round was that Raiders opening try. And then we talked about the crazy Dearden try and some beautiful sleight of hand. Like, it wasn't terrible defense. Some of these tries was amazing attack. Like, how in sync these attacks are. Because, like, some of the play, the halves play, like between Hines and Moylan, they're dropping passes off to each other without even looking. They're throwing passes to space where the player's not even there, and it's just perfect timing. But how about the Hiku try? And I thought that line break where the Cowboys broke down the left and then swung it back to the right. And on the run, that ball that Taumalolo threw was breathtaking. Like, the NFL kicks off tomorrow morning. There's quarterbacks that can't throw a spiral on the move. It's beautiful. I know it's different technique, but as beautiful as Taumalolo threw that ball on the money, 30-meter cutout spiral ball to Hiku, who turned back the clock and went around Talakai, whether he was 100%. Talakai's not the fastest player, and he got exposed there. And that was an amazing try, and that was the second of back-to-back tries for the Cowboys that got their noses in front. But what made this game so crazy is that each team got in front, and it was back and forth all night, and it was so enthralling. And that's how I guess we should end this pod. Oh, no, hang on. I forgot to also talk about the fact that Tommy Gilbert scored the first try at 91-1. That's what I mean. We're going to forget stuff. So thanks, Jeff, for reminding us. And I wanted to talk about the multi. So we'll start with positive first. So that's the beauty of being in our group. And look, I'm not saying like Tripod takes credit for every winner that's tipped in our group, because there's plenty of tips that probably get tipped that don't win. I'm not like trying to cherry pick a winner, right? But Nicole is somebody who has been on the pod several times and who contributes write-ups and contributes links with stats and is really on the ball when it comes to lineup changes and tipping in our group nearly every game day when there's a value, usually a forward that might have moved to an edge, a value try score bet. And he put this up, and it's pretty logical. Gilbert priced as if he's on the interchange bench, but starting second row for Luciano Leilua. And Nicole tips it, says, get on first try score 91, get on first try for his team 41, get on to score a try first half, $26. And so we actually sent the word to a couple of people we knew who could back it on Sportsbet. So we're cheering Tommy Gilbert. Very early in the game, the Cowboys had an opportunity and throw a face ball to Gilbert on fifth tackle, and it's only an outstanding tackle by Nico Hines that denies him. And I thought, that's his chance. But no, a couple of minutes later, he actually does score off a bomb, and there's so much tension there because we don't know if it's going to be given. I'm just praying for that confirmed try graphic. It doesn't come. They review it. And then the bunker says, we can see there's contact on Nico Hines, which honestly, that happens 30 times a game where a team, you know, goes in and pushes a tackle. And of course, like a hand goes on a defender and it doesn't really matter. And then you think they're taking it off him. But no, they say it's not enough contact. Give the try. $91. Well done. In fact, Ben Williamson, who was on the pod on Thursday, apparently he tipped it in his group as well. So what a fill-up for everyone who got on that. That's one of the great moments because in punting, it's one thing to get on, and I judge tipsters who get great prices. When I look at anyone's tip, you know, if someone tips a first try scorer, like if you tipped Alex Johnston today, I don't think, oh, like how did he know it was going to be? Because no one knows who's going to score first. But if you can get great prices, then you're someone I want to follow. But getting a great price doesn't actually, you can't eat that and you can't, that doesn't pay the bills. You need the luck where it actually cashes. So to get $91 on a guy that should have been like 25-1 and then for it to win and so dramatic as well, that was amazing. So congrats to Nicole and we appreciate him. And that's the advantage you have if you do hang out in our Facebook group. And then the final sour note, the multi I gave out this weekend, 13-1, had unders on Friday night. That cashed. When an AFL leg, Brisbane Lions, they were $5 underdogs. I had them plus 22.5. Came back and won the game on Friday night, so I know the boys in the Olympic City are excited. And it came down to needing Cowboys 1-12. The Cowboys did win 1-12, but it was a normal time bet. And I know some people were really disappointed. And I think every punter, it's like a rite of passage. At some point in your life, you back a team 1-12, and they win in Golden Point. You think you won, you find out you didn't. It certainly happened to me many years ago. And now I'm very conscious of it. And I know people were really frustrated because there were some people absolutely cheering, probably thinking the multi had won. And it would be a sickening feeling to log on and it was tipped on Dabble and see, no, it didn't win. And then it was salt in the wounds that some other people in our group said, oh, I copied your multi. I didn't play it on Dabble. I played at Sportsbet and I got paid out and people were angry at Dabble. And I just say, it's on me. It's not really Dabble's fault. I'm very aware that some 1-12s are 80 minute and some 1-12s are full time and it's built into the price. And some bookies had 1-12 at $3, but includes extra time. This was 3:40, and you know it is my fault because I knew this game had every possibility of going to extra time. But even the most likely game to go to extra time is probably like a 5% probability, you know, 1 in 20 or something like that. I still thought it was a great price for Cowboys. I'm disappointed with how this round went ultimately because you know missed opportunity to not have a winning best bet on the Panthers game. We nailed the handicap with the Cowboys game somehow in a perfect week. We didn't win our multi. And then, as I say, we left one on the table today. So, yeah, it's frustrating. But, I think everyone at least should take awareness from that. Like some bookies offer 1-12 odds on the 80 minute and some include extra time. And some bookies like Toppy give you both. And that's why you can see it's higher odds if you do it for 80 minutes because the greater likelihood of a draw. So I wanted to address that and say that, like, that's on me. I take that bet. And it's the anchor of our multi. I'm trying to get a little bit more greedy or I'm trying to go for something a little bit more juicy because there were only four games. We only had one best bet. So you kind of got to try and find, obviously that's why I was reaching for AFL, even though the AFL tip worked out really well. I'm trying to find some value. You know, I did it a couple of weeks ago where we swept our best bets. And although the Bulldogs covered, I got greedy and went Bulldogs, I think, either team 1-12 and they lost by 16, you know, and that was the only reason that multi lost. So we've had way too many multis lose by one leg this year. So I know there's frustration there. This is ultimately it's out of our control. We can do is try and do our best breaking down the games. And that what I will say on that is we're 85% like for the last 2 months. We're 25-5 on best bets since round 17. Like it's actually insane. We're 60% overall for the year, which is insane on its own, let alone from where we've come from. So that I am proud of. And you obviously the work is paying off And it is worthwhile. People tuning in are getting really good advice that can definitely help your punting and help you with angles that can make your bets more profitable. Anything else, any closing thoughts, Padonis? Because I feel like, we're going to finish this pod and then remember five other crazy things that happened this weekend. But you got anything else for us?
No, just fantastic to have NRL finals back because this time of the year is a special time. Spring's in the air, and you touched on it earlier. NFL starts tomorrow. For all of those guys who haven't checked out the group yet, we are doing a mixed matchup this year. It's a Mateo's mixed matchup. So I've posted one on Friday and put it in the group over the weekend. So you can jump on Dabble and have a look at that. So tomorrow's one for week one. We've got the Jaguars to outscore the Packers, and that's at $3.25. So hopefully a nice juicy one to start the year off, and you can have up to $100 on that. So as always, jump on Dabble, Top Sport, and have a look if that's if you feel that's appealing and you agree.
Yeah, you're working overtime, mate, because obviously you're going to keep doing what you do with me throughout this NRL season, but the NFL kicks off, well, it already kicked off Friday, but the full week one tomorrow. You're going to share like a best bet or two or a couple of best bets each week if you see them, and you're doing a mixed matchup on your own. So it's Mateo's mixed matchup for NFL, something we haven't had available to our group before, but we've had a lot of popular demand, and I'm just solely focused on NRL, and I cannot do justice NFL at the moment, but we have so many other great minds like Mateos, who went 60%. No, what percent did you go on NRL? Did you go 60% on NFL tips last year as well?
Yeah.
Or some really prop? You did. So, like, that's insane. And obviously, Maddie and Barney with the Prop Me Up show, and then Nettie as well, who is on two shows. He's on a collaborative show with YKTR if you want to check out. YKTR Sports, he's on a show with The Scope that I was listening to this morning, which is outstanding NFL breakdown as well. And then Nettie does his own Nettie Give It Sunday episode. And you and I are probably going to have early nights tonight because we will be up early morning tomorrow to watch it all because we love it. I love it as a fan, but get still focused on NRL, still want to keep delivering the goods to everyone. And it still is the greatest game of all, rugby league. I mean, you just cannot beat what we just watched for four matches. It promised a lot and it delivered so much more. Let us know what you thought about the whole round, guys. Share any of your thoughts in the comments. We appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back at it. And just two games to break down on Wednesday, so I'm sure it'll be a shorter pod, but we'll see what we can find out. We'll share it with you. We'll see you then. Have a great week. And Lego.